Good morning, sir. Welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Currency this morning for your hearing, your oral hearing today, and your hearing will be chaired by the Honorable Mr. David Neal. So we're gonna, the next voice you hear will be that of the Honorable Mr. Neal. Come on, sir.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, you're going for Arizona Board of Executive Currency this morning in reference to a court hearing. Would you please state your full name and ADC number for the record, please?
Gary Moore, 056037.
Okay. I need a little more information about your incarceration and some information about the offense. As we go along, and I'll verify with you that it's as correct as we can get it. We need a package of information, and we have to go on that. We don't have anything else outside that information, so I'll verify it with you. So first, I'm going to introduce the board members of the conducting the hearing this morning. To my right is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chairman, and to his right is the Honorable Louis Quinones. My name is David Neal, and I'll be the hearing lead. So, sir, we'll start out. You're 54 years old now?
Yes.
Okay, so you're serving two concurrent life sentences for aggravated assault, that each count is an aggravated assault. And it began June 14, 1986, after a jury found you guilty. And you were sentenced on November 7, 1986. You became parole eligible on June 11, 2014, and you were certified for this hearing for liberal parole home arrest and lawful discharge on August 1, 2018. You've been before the board seven times for parole. You were granted general parole on January 24th, 2011. And you were denied after discharge until September 20th, 2012. And then your parole was revoked on September 9th, 2015, after being violated for not paying two revision fees, which had run to a total of $2,210 owed. Does that sound correct so far, sir?
Correct.
Okay, Mr. Roy has a long-term history of the assaulting behavior. During the early 1984, Governor AWOL and while he was AWOL, he was arrested for a knife assault in Phoenix, which he served 5 months in jail and over 3 years probation. He was returned to the Army until his less than honorable discharge on May 22, 1985. He was still serving in probation when he committed to the present offense. Okay, still on track, sir?
Yes.
Okay, so you actually have almost no discipline since you've been in. And let's see. You haven't had any since 2003. That's very commendable, sir. You don't have much in way of programming and all that since 2009. We're really in letters of support that we have with the program in the audience today. I couldn't find an opposition letter from Maricopa County Attorney's Office. I don't believe we have any victims present and no letters in the packet. I got a misplaced part of my paper. This is somewhat of a disjointed history. Mr. Roy was on probation at the time of this offense, which aggravated it up. And that's the reason the sentence is as long as they are. All right, so it looks like on June 14, 1986, about 1:45 a.m., 24-year-old victim was in the passenger seat of his cousin's pickup truck. His cousin let him in, and the girl sat between the two of them. As the vehicle stopped at a traffic sign, the two youths in the truck discussed going to a restaurant for something to eat. The defendant and another individual were standing alongside the truck, and the latter suggesting that they go to eat at, see, he said, my restaurant, and probably would work. Anyway, there seems to have been a discussion or a disagreement between Mr. Roy and the passenger by the window in that pickup truck. And Mr. Roy reached in the window and had a brass knuckle and knife combination, and he sliced his victim through the open window. And the truck drove away, and the police were summoned. So, at this time, Mr. Roy, I would like at this time for you to kind of tell us about what happened then and what, you know, what the argument, disagreement, whatever it was that prompted you to strike at that victim, and kind of what was going on in your life to cause you to do something like that. And then from there, we'll go on to what you've done to improve yourself and get yourself ready for a return to society, if possible. Okay?
Well, like you said, this, I was walking down the street, but I was with another man, and I worked at the restaurant here. And he's the one who spoke to the victim at the stoplight, or at the, you know, the stop sign. I kept walking, and I cut across the parking lot, and I don't know what the words were between those two, but the truck turned off onto the street, then a U-turn came back around to where I was walking at through the parking lot. And the guy, the victim, was on the passenger seat, threw something in my face, and it turns out it was a radio vest. And I guess the guy who he was talking to that I was walking with is the one who threw it into the truck. And I don't remember how first one he threw it into the truck, or as I said, what the word was between them. Or maybe he just locked him in the truck. But the guy pulled up on me, threw it in my face, and when I pulled it down, that's when he threw a punch at me. And I still wasn't sure what was happening, but I didn't want this guy to attack me further, and I didn't want him to get out of the truck. So that's when I pulled out the knife and I punched at him and slashed at him.
Okay. Before we go on, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about that. It seems that you've had a long history, at least up until that point, of using a brass knuckle knife combination on people. Most of your offenses, your serious ones, when there's any kind of assault, it seems like you've always had a knife and at least threatened with it. And that's a, I know that's a pretty serious type behavior if you do that. And it said that you joined the Army to try to better your education, but you went AWOL shortly after you went in. Why did you do that, sir?
Well, I ended up getting with a trespassing offense. And I ended up in the county jail, so while I was in the county jail, my time expired for me to move on to, you know, this unit. And so when I was in the county jail waiting for a hearing, that's when the Army left me as able. And I tried to stay in after that, and I they just ended up kicking me out. But I really wanted to stay in.
Okay, so you were having this argument with the victim that was inside the truck. And he threw something at you. According to the paperwork I have, it was one of your friends that had thrown a vest at him about a restaurant, and then he threw that back at you. And so did it have something heavy in it that hit you and caused you some kind of injury or something that wanted to pull out a knife and slash him against somebody?
The vest wasn't heavy, but his fist was more punchy.
Huh?
Okay, I mean, was there, did this other person have any kind of weapon he displayed or threatened you with or anything else, or was it just this limp vest that was thrown at you and hit you in the face and upset you?
Well, again, like I said, the guy threw a punch at me after he threw the vest in my face, and I didn't see a weapon.
Okay, but according to the reports we have, you reached inside that truck to slash him. He wasn't outside the truck or trying to get out the truck. He was sitting there and you reached in through the open window and slashed at him with that. That's to me, that's a little bit excessive for just having thrown a vest back at you, even if he called you all kinds of names and stuff like that. He didn't, he wasn't trying to hit you or displaying a weapon or anything like that. So, I mean, what would prompt somebody to take that excessive force type of retaliation against somebody sitting in a pickup truck? I mean, I can understand you being upset if there were names exchanged and if this vest was thrown out, caught you by surprise, but unless it was full of heavy stuff, I can't imagine that he would think you were injured and had some reason to strike back like that.
Well, as I said, I didn't strike back until he punched me, and from that point on, I didn't want to hurt him any further. And yes, I do agree it was a little extreme, and the jury certainly thought so. And since then, I just don't carry a knife like that.
Okay. Let's move on. So, why don't you tell the board what you've done to prepare yourself for a return to the community if the board should vote for some type of release? What have you done to change yourself and control your anger and those kind of things to get ready for a release?
Well, I've been drinking at night, and since then I just don't drink anymore. It is because I'm in prison. There's ways of getting alcohol in here and drugs, and I just haven't done that since age 6. And as far as bettering myself, I've taken all the classes provided by the Department of Corrections, plus I've done a couple more on my own. But right now there aren't too many available for me in my situation, especially on the union I have right now. They kind of priority ranking, and they're trying to focus attention more on the people who are actually going to serve the sentence and then be released automatically. And so a lot of the programs are geared towards them right now. But when I was locked up in 86, from 86 to 2014, I took advantage of the college courses that were offered back then. So you would go to a unit and the local community college, sometimes they would have classes there taught at the unit or through closed circuit TV. And I took advantage of whatever classes I could sign up with. So when I was released in 2011, I had a slew of credits. And I had a couple of certificates, one in computers and one in small business. And when I was released, I took advantage of a scholarship, a federal scholarship, and I turned around my credits, got them all together, and took a couple more college courses online and was able to get an associate's degree in business. And I was going to continue that when I went on to the bachelor's and eventually an MBA, but that's when I was violated. I couldn't run.
Okay, I see.
Anything else after that?
I see that you did take. There's been some substance abuse, conflict resolution, pre-release programming, but those were all back in 2008, 2009, 2010, quite a while back. Don't you think that like a pre-release type program would be beneficial to take again at this point in time when you are coming up for a parole on a regular basis?
Sure, if one were offered to me, I'd probably take advantage of it.
Okay, so now, January of 2011, you ran a Record Pro, and then in February of 2015, it was revoked. So why couldn't you pay your supervision fees while you're out, sir?
Well, I was only working part-time, plus I was taking those courses, and my instructors were just saying they couldn't get a full-time job. And so, like, with the part-time job, I was, barely making ends meet.
But you were out 4 years, sir.
About 3 years actually, and with that 25-year gap in my work history, and plus my age, a lot of companies, they don't want to take my applications, and so I turned in a lot of applications online, followed up, never heard anything, and when I found that part-time job cleaning through janitorial over at Chase Field, well, I held on to it. That was the only thing I could get at the time. And I was actually starting to move up a little bit in the company when my proposals were booked.
Did you make any effort to pay any of it, or did you just not pay at all? Because I'm looking at the paperwork, you were staffed many times about that issue, and it just kept building, and that's why they revoked you. And you weren't showing any fiscal responsibility. You got...
Actually, I was showing a tremendous amount of fiscal responsibility because I was going to work on time, every day, every time they called me, and whatever money I was making was going to remain free.
And so where were you working?
I was working for a company that contracts and cleaned buildings.
So in 4 years, that was the only job that you could find?
Yeah, and that was our part-time work. I couldn't find anything full-time. Okay. Some companies told me flat out I was too old, I don't have any skills. It didn't matter how I would present myself or do anything positive, I just couldn't get hired.
Okay, well, I guess you still owe that money. It's like any other kind of debt that you incur, you're still going to have to pay it. So, according to your release plan, you would intend to stay with Linda Smith, who's here today. After finding employment, you'll seek your own residence, but have there been anything to try to line up a job? Because there are a lot of companies out there that won't turn you away just because you were a felon, and they're hard work, but they're usually full-time jobs, and you have to work with your hands and all that stuff, but have you made any effort to locate any kind of employment? It's been 3 years since you were reincarcerated, and I would think that because that money was the issue, you've been making some effort to come up with something, at least idea, rather than when find suitable employment. That's a pretty vague statement of what you're going to do for work.
We were supposed to help you with that.
Pardon me?
I believe one of my friends, I'm just going to be helping you with that. Can you find the place where I'm going to stay with community support and possible employment? She's going to try to help you with that.
Okay, well, what about you? You don't seem to have a whole lot of ambition about this stuff, sir.
I'm a realist. I tend to look at things as they are. It's just hard for me to find employment.
Okay.
Suitable employment, I understand.
Okay. case, sir. I was in my fourth ward of the county trusting at this time.
Mr. Gaddy? Can you hear me?
Yes.
It's been, I think, 3 years since your parole was revoked, correct?
In December of this year, it was 4 years.
Okay, thank you, sir. How have you changed since you returned to the Department of Corrections and in a way that would convince us that you should be returned to supervised release?
How have I changed?
Yes, sir.
From what, the whole reason I'm here is, because I just couldn't pay, as far as correcting my behavior, that was done, over 30 years ago. As I said, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs, I'm not violent, I don't carry knives like that, no more since that time, since my conviction in 86.
I guess I meant how you evolved. You're saying you've completely evolved, and I guess I'll just leave it at that. I wanted to see if you've somehow evolved further since you've been inside the Department of Corrections. You were given an opportunity to return to the community in 2011. You were revoked in 2015. And it's not impossible, by any shape of the imagination, that this board would vote to return you to the community. And I guess I was asking where you're at now.
Well, I just have to pick up where I left off at. Just for whatever, try to go back to school. I don't know, I can't get a scholarship anymore. I probably just have to I probably have to look into getting a scholarship, and I'm going to pick up where I left off at. I'm going to try to work and go to school. Those are my two main goals.
Thank you, Mr. Gaddy. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Honorable Mr. Neal. Mr. Roberts, I guess what I'm going to ask is, this is more or less a challenge rather than, and please don't take it out of context. You made some comments that concern me very much. I admit that when you were out, you accumulated this debt, which can be expected. You couldn't find any employment. You said that one reason you couldn't find any employment was that you were 54 years old. Well, you were less than that at that time, much less than 54, because you're 54 now. You're barely turned 50 years of age now, but that's still a young age these days now. Early 50s, late 40s, early 50s, that's a young age. I'm just wondering if you were realistic in terms of looking for employment, or you were looking for something special. And that's my question about this whole thing, employment. Yes, if you're looking for something special, a real professional job, I can understand why you might not have been able to find employment. But if you're just looking for employment just to work, your age should not have been a problem at all. You should have been able to find some employment, sir, to pay your bill. You have to make, in my opinion, this is my opinion, not yours, and I'm not asking you to agree with me, but you have to make some decisions, on your own. Was it more important, and I'm not going to answer this for you or for anyone else, was it more important for you to spend money going to school or for your paying your bills so that you would not be reincarcerated? If you had just paid those bills, we wouldn't be talking to you today. You would have your freedom, and then you could still get your education. But I think you made a valued judgment, which I'm not going to question, It would be important for you to get your education and to stay out here. And if I had been in your shoes, I would have made a decision, I'm going to pay my bills so that I will never be reincarcerated again. Thank you so much, Honorable Mr. Studio, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Ryan. I just want to make a couple more statements on this, and then we'll let your support come up and speak if they wish. First of all, you don't feel there's any help for the program available, but if new programs exist or become available, you would be willing to participate in them. Don't you think that some of the things, especially like the release program, things like that, since it's been 7, 8, 9 years since you took them, don't you think those would be relevant to take at this point in time when you're trying to get back out?
Oh, yes, of course. And if that program were offered at the union and how's that, you know, I certainly would sign up for it. You know, I'd be. But it isn't. It's only, from my understanding, available to only a few units. And as I said, it was a priority ranking system. So certain inmates are more eligible than others.
Okay, but I would think that since you've actually been released, you're not looked at as the basic lifer that's got 10 or 20 years left before it got paid, you know, but there's other issues also. You said you didn't have any skills, but we have inmates all the time coming in front of us talking about their certification in masonry and other kind of building trades and construction work that they learned and they got their certification while they were incarcerated, and they were lifers when they were doing it. So it just doesn't set well with me when I hear that there isn't anything available. We also get inmates that come through and we have a stack of papers like this, the certificates from the junior colleges around the state, and courses that are done through the mail. There's all kinds of things that they all take self-initiative. Then the other thing that really troubles me a lot, and this is one statement you made today, and it really troubles me, and it's you sat there and said that the whole reason that you're here, that you're incarcerated, is because you didn't pay some money. The whole reason you're where you're at is because of the offense that you committed and all of the offenses you committed, and that's why in jail, you were released and given a chance to return to the community, and the reason you had to go back to serving the sentence for all of those crimes you committed was because you didn't pay your fees. So the whole reason you're there is because you have a long criminal history and you were convicted of crimes that you were put in jail for a long time. Now, then the release, you have to do stuff on your own, make some efforts and do it. So you're not there because of money. You're there because you committed a crime and you're convicted of it. Okay? You're back there because you didn't follow the rules when you were given a chance to return to the community.
But I didn't commit another crime.
I didn't say you committed another crime, sir. You didn't follow the rules. Following rules and, you know, disobeying rules doesn't make you a criminal. Okay, following the rules of your release, you know, those conditions of release, following them is a condition that you have to follow to be able to get out and try to prove yourself for actual discharge. Okay, but you didn't follow the rules. Just like somebody that gets caught smoking pot when they're on release. That in itself can be a crime, but it's not because they're convicted of anything. If they broke the rules of release, can't be around anybody under 18. And they're not around somebody who's under 18. That broke the rules. They didn't commit a crime necessarily. They broke the rules, and that's what you did. But for 4 years, you broke the rules.
I should break the rules on purpose.
Well, sir. But the thing is, you have 4 years to make a choice of how to handle that, and for 4 years, you didn't seem to make any effort because there's a long list of staffings and everything, and you knew the consequences of not paying it, but you didn't change anything. So Right at this point in time, sir, I'm going to go ahead and defer to your supporter that's here if she wants to speak. And Linda, what time?
Linda, yes.
Would you like to come up and address the board, ma'am?
I wanted to ask a question for you.
Ma'am, would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Linda Smith.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask you, how much does he owe in back to roll fees?
According to this, it was, when it was revoked, I think it was $2,210, but I don't know the exact amount. You have to check with the parole office to find out the exact amount that's in there. But according to the paperwork we have, that's how much it was.
Okay. I was working in the Department of Corrections for 22 years. I was a correctional officer, a sergeant, a lieutenant, a program officer, and a parole officer during that time. And when I was a parole officer, it's been, I'm bad with numbers, when was 9/11? The 2001, was that when that happened?
Yes,
yeah, well that's, I retired that August right before that, so I've been out for quite a while. But never in all the time that I was there did anyone ever get revoked for not paying the parole fees. And I don't think some of the things that he was accused of here, you know, not paying his parole fees, it was hard for him. He had only had a part-time job, was probably depressed, lost his apartment because he couldn't pay his apartment rent and was homeless. He was making some attempts to do things right and wasn't financially able to manage it all, and parole fees were the least of his worries when he needed food and lodging, and he was homeless at the end. It's very difficult on a part-time minimum wage job to provide yourself with housing, provide yourself with food, and pay your parole fees and get to your parole, you know, that's pretty hard work for a person. I am mentoring a guy right now that has had not worked in a long time and has had all kinds of problems, and I helped him get a job. He now has $1,000 in his account, and he's ready to get out on his own now. I can help him get back on his feet. And I was really flabbergasted when he was not given his parole last time when he came before the board, and for some, I can't remember the reason, but some reason he didn't get another chance. 6 months later, it's a whole year for him. You know, yes, he had a violent history when he was young, but he has had nothing like that for many, many, many years, and I don't think that it's fair to be holding that against him at this point. I think he needs to be released. That's all I have to say.
Any questions from the board? Thank you, ma'am. Is there anyone else here that would like to speak in support of Mr. Roy? No one else in support of Mr. Roy? Thank you. And I don't see any victims, advocates, or anybody from the county attorney's office. Do the board have any more questions for Mr. Roy before we move on? I'll take questions. Okay, sir, you're nearing the end of your hearing. The board will go into discussion and make a determination, and we'll get this done in a few minutes. But before we start that, I would like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Give us any other information you think might be pertinent to our decision. We just ask that you don't repeat all the information we've already been talking about. So now is your opportunity. If there's anything else you'd like to tell us.
I just want to say that since 1986, when this conviction happened, I and changed my life, so I am not that 2 weeks of the old kid who did that stuff. So if released, what you're going to have is someone who, as you said earlier, has a ball. And that was the main reason why I was incarcerated, because of that part of the history, and that person isn't me anymore.
Okay, sir, thank you very much. The board will be going into discussion to make a determination. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. You may think we're addressing you, but we won't be. So we ask you to remain silent, but stay on the phone, and you can hear the entire discussion, okay?
Sure.
Thank you. Our board is now in discussion. Well, this, Mr. Lloyd, presents a... I think this is pretty tragic, and in its totality, the accumulation of his behavior getting into long sentences. He convinced the board he rehabilitated enough to be put back into society and given a chance, but he didn't maintain. Now, I'm from my experience with the parole system, parole officers and staff, the listings of staffers that you have for not paying those fees, I have to come to the conclusion that the parole staff, they need different opportunities, gave him many chances, tried to work with him. And apparently, if he wasn't paying, it was almost 4 years before they decided that he was not making the necessary attempts to take care of it. And unfortunately, I don't hear the conviction in Mr. Lloyd's voice as far as whether he needed to make sure something like that wouldn't happen again, that if he gets released, he gets another chance. Be very proactive in doing what he has to do, following all the rules. But I also get the impression that that he's not a little self-motivated, and he just doesn't seem to have that that spark that somebody that truly wants to get out and make the best of it. And I understand it sounds a little unusual that somebody is revoked because they own fees, but that's one of the conditions of release. It's on there when he was released on parole. And then we'll step back out and we can give these all our rule. So I, at this time, I really don't feel Mr. Lloyd's quite ready for release back into society, but we'll have some discussion for me and my fellow board member. Mr. Kilmer?
I think one thing I want to bring up as someone who's been through parole board training in recent years, there's some serious discussion about the totality of a case and an individual's discipline inside the Department of Corrections is not a standalone reason as to determining whether or not someone is going to be successful under supervised release. It's certainly one of the reasons, and it's certainly something that I look at. I think the thing that is concerning me a little bit is one voting board member. I'm not a counselor, I'm not a psychologist, and I'm certainly not mentoring anybody or returning to the community. Is I asked a routine question about how he's changed in the system, how he's evolved. I ask that question all the time. And the answer was some variation that he's completely evolved, that he's completely arrived, and I think it's suspect. I think that there are some very serious reasons as to why Mr. Gaddy was in the correction system in the first place, And once again, they were not standalone reasons, there was a totality of reasons leading up to the event. He was given an opportunity to return to the community. I don't completely understand how the payment of his fees got so out of hand, but it seemed like an issue that could have been solved by him then. And I think he's being somewhat matter-of-fact about it now. So it makes me question as to whether or not he's ready to return to the community to make the commitment to adhere to the conditions of supervision. That's where I'm at. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Dr. Ray.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Neal. I think that Mr. Roy is an intelligent individual. I read him just a little different than my colleagues. I think that he wants everything to be defined the way that he wants them defined, rather than looking at the full picture. We have to look at the full picture. We just cannot look at one aspect of a situation. And he's only looking at where he stood when he came out. That where he had, I believe, over almost 4 years of being out, and somehow he was, in his mind, he was unsuccessful in finding employment. And I can't disagree with him because I was not in his shoes. But I just cannot see, with all of the opportunities out there, with Salvation Army, with other groups out there, why he could not find suitable employment. I still feel that he was looking for something special. He was looking for something to challenge his mind instead of looking at something that would have kept him out. And somehow he just didn't get it, and I still don't believe it. Based on what he's saying, I think he might get it, but based on what he's saying, he's still not getting it, and I'm disappointed with that. Therefore, as one board member, I'm just not in favor at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ray. Okay, so based on our discussion, I'm going to make a motion to see how it turns out. So at this time, I'm going to make a motion to deny Mr. Lee Morley. Let him pull him after discharge or home arrest at this time, and ask for a 1 year set off. And that's my motion. I'm going to leave it after we vote. So that's my motion. Deny Rick Cole home arrest after discharge at this time.
Second.
Okay.
Second by Mr. Cummings and by Dr. Wright. The reasons for the serious and violent offense, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, violating previous probation parole, history of assaulting behavior, armed criminal history, is a repeat offender, I'm in a market lock program, all these have some programming, I think there are more things that can be accomplished in programming. His wish plan is somewhat lacking in the fact that it doesn't appear to have actually been contacted when the company is trying to secure employment before he gets out. And unless there's something else that my fellow board would like to add. Okay, Mr. Roy, you heard the discussion. The board is willing to deny parole after discharge or home arrest at this time. Also, it can be in about 1 year when the Department of Corrections certified for another appearance for another parole hearing. We do wish you the best of luck. Try to get any and all the programming you can get, even if you don't think it's totally relevant or it is helpful. And see if you can get with your friend
might be able to help you actually make better contact with some companies, try to secure an employment before you actually are released again. So you understand, sir?
I understand.
Okay, well, listen to your hearing, sir, and would you put the CO3 back on the phone, please?
Yes, sir, I think that's the last one you had for us at Tucson today, sir.